Welcome to the stream
we are back.
We are. This is Deprogram with Ted Rawl and Jamarl Thomas. Ted Rawl, though, is not here. JT is over here on the right, which is weird because he should 100% be on my left, but we are. But no, hey, it's okay. We'll make it work. I'm gonna go ahead and turn on the phones too, so if people want to call in, they can.
Oh, badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I actually tried to use that. I think it was maybe a week ago. I was using Rumble Studio and I was trying to get the call in. I'm thankful people to call in.
Yeah, no, I mean, you got to install the Rumble app. I've never tried calling into a show because I'm already on the show. So it'd be kind of like me trying to call myself, which probably really wouldn't work so well.
It'd be a little weird.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. I'm not that much of a narcissist.
We were talking about Bill O'Reilly, how Oberman used to get in his ass. And, you know, in the old days, YouTube shows used to attack other YouTube shows. Like, let's say, like, one channel would be beefing with another channel. It was like rap videos. It was like, this is the South, or this is the West, or this is the East Coast, or whatever. They used to fight, and they used to, like, argue and bitch at each other. Keith Oberman is the first time I've ever seen a television show do that, where he was going after Bill O'Reilly, going after Lou Dobbs. And it is some of the funniest content where he is like ragging on both. Yeah. Yeah. But that was the voice of a generation, like talking about Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I mean, were you ever just a card carrying Republican?
Oh, yeah.
Before you kind of had your awakening of sorts.
Yeah, back before I realized that they were lying to me. Oh, yeah. Like, I used to listen to them all. I mean, I was a member of the Republican Party. I used to listen to Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and, of course, Bill O'Reilly. I mean, just like Fox News is the source of truth.
Yeah.
And really, for me, my wake-up call was the first time that I ever read the Bible all the way through. And just like, these people are lying to me.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, that was the Damascus moment. Yeah, it's just like, it's like I told you before. It's just, I would much rather have an honest enemy that just looks me in my face and says, "You know, Robbie, I hate you with a burning passion." I can understand. I can respect that honesty. I have no patience for someone who pretends like they're my friend and just pisses down my back and tells me it's raining.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, I would tell you this. There's never a situation where people, like political entities, especially if they're doing something bad, do bad things honestly. Yeah, like doing bad things honestly is the quickest way to get caught, the fact that you're doing something bad, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just kind of the way it works. I think, you know, my wake-up call was Sanders. Bernie Sanders was my wake-up call. I learned a lot from real world phenomena. I was that way in chess. I'm that way in real life. And if you show me something, I'm going to believe the thing that I'm being shown. What I mean by that is, like, if you are, there was this implicit understanding that, okay, third way Democrats and New Deal Democrats, basically, like, let's say the Sanders types, the lefties, the people who are, who want actually to get things done, that we're not really going to entirely get those things done, but we're not against you.
Right.
And we'll work in tandem to get the minor things done that we minorly get done. Right. And then when you see the Sanders thing, you realize, okay, well, all the energy is coming out of one side.
Right.
These other people are dead. And like, there's nobody who is enthused about this other side. And yet, the deal breaks down because the other side now is changing the rule set because they are losing in the rule set that they were going with before.
Yeah.
That is a breathtaking realization for somebody who's like young and who's looking at politics, and they realize, oh, we're not on the same side, which means though that you're on your own the next time anything comes up, which was to the detriment of the party. Like, I don't believe for a moment that that's the benefit. Now, a new generation is obviously going to come in, and that new generation is not necessarily going to know what took place. And so you can still con them with this idea that we're working on the same team because they don't know that the rule set is going to change if ever they start to take priority. No, man, that was my wake up. That was a realization to me that was like cold water to the face. It was like, we're not on the same team. No. This is different. This is, you know, we're not working in tandem with one another.
I mean, brother, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's just, I don't know what the answer is. I know it's not what we're currently doing. It just does not work. It doesn't work.
I think it just breaks down. I mean, give me your take on that. But it just seems, I look at this like a mechanical process that it just can't go on like this. But I could be wrong. Maybe it does.
No, I think you're right. I think that the problem with any form of government is that they eventually devolve into an oligarchy. It doesn't matter if you're a monarchy. It doesn't matter if you are a republic. It doesn't matter if you're a democratic socialist state. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it eventually breaks down to the point where there's an oligarchy. And the only way that you can then break the power of the oligarchy is that the cycle has to reset, has to be replaced by a strong man. I think that's the picture history shows, like from the very beginning, is just, that's what happens. It's just a matter of how violent is that going to be and how long does it take? Right now, I think we're at the point right now. Now, I've made this allegory before, is there's a lot of parallels with where we are now with the end of the Roman Republic and Augustus becoming the first emperor. Like, he kept the trappings of republicanism. But they saw the Senate, they saw elections, they still went through the motions, but at the end of the day, though, it simply did not matter.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we are now. And it's just... Yeah.
The democracy part was being hollowed out.
No.
Like, I mean... It's a parody of itself.
Yeah. It just kind of comes down to, do you believe that Julius Caesar was a authoritarian or was he a reformer? And that's the question that people are asking, you know, for the last 2,000 years, honestly. His whole thing was, the Caesar is that the oligarchs have taken control of the Senate. You need a strong man to break it. So you have to become a dictator to break the power of the oligarchy to restore the republic to what it was supposed to have been in the first place. And then the question is do you believe was he sincere with his reforms? Or do you think it was just all a shell game? Me personally, I think that he was sincere with it. Else, if the beat was just going to be up, was going to go on with just with a different marketing team, there'd have been no reason for the Senate to have assassinated him.
I mean, I guess. Okay, so there's Octavius and Julius, right? We're talking about Julius, the first one. I don't think I believe in altruistic. I don't think I believe in altruistic people in regards to politics. The Senate at that point, if I remember correctly, had started to press charges against him because of his military escapades in Gaul, if I remember correctly.
Well, that happened before, but he won the first civil war. And so, like, this all happened after Pompey was defeated. And so after he won that first civil war, and then he went back to Rome and the promise was, people of Rome, I'm going to give you back what your promise, what the deal is.
Right.
And so the first part of that was the Julian calendar. You know, that was part of the reforms, the land reforms. Mm-hmm. One of the things he wanted to do was outlaw slavery because he realized that that was actually hollowing out the Roman middle class. It was a destructive force.
But isn't that just a path to power?
Of course.
Like, say, for example, you get a political coalition in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and the political coalition recognizes, hey, people actually do want healthcare. They do want education. And they do want us to stop wars. And they start this kind of tip of the spear of trying to pull people from the left into the right, into a political coalition that gets them into power. Like, basically, it's just the new political coalition that he effectively created, whereas the oligarchs hated the fact that he was doing it because they were losing out in whatever deals that he was effectively making with the population. Meaning it's kind of like, have you ever read Peter Tushin's End Times?
Never have.
Okay. The book is astonishingly good. And it gives context to our own government. Tushin makes the argument that after every 250, 300, 400 years, that countries go through revolutions. And they go through revolutions for pretty much the same reason. As you pointed out, the politicians get decadent. Any kind of revolutionary spirit that started a particular country evaporates. And those people are just, at this point, decadent oligarchs of sorts. That they wed themselves or weed themselves into a particular system. They make arguments about how they're necessary in the system. Media and everything else conforms around them. That basically you've created a system that becomes so ossified and incapable of change because they don't want it to change, that you get other elites who are pissed off at these elites because they can no longer reach into the field of the elites, in which case they start agitating with the population that is immiserated against these elites. So basically, elites that are not able to get into the elite status harness the will of the population to fight against the elites that are already in power to create a new political coalition. Sometimes this ends up in revolution. Sometimes this ends up as a political revolution. But his argument is that every 200 years or so, and that the U.S. was able to get out of it the first time around with FDR because of the New Deal. It basically staved off the worst aspects of the decline. That looks like this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the whole idea of elections is to have a peaceful, controlled revolution every so often just to blow off steam. I think that's really the whole argument. Yeah. And that works until people believe that the system no longer works.
Yes. And which is why Trump screaming that the elections were stolen was such a third rail. If you notice, they never touched that stuff. Like even Clinton, when she got Jill Stein to do it, Clinton didn't do the interrogation into the I forget which state. She got Jill Stein to do it. She paid Jill Stein because she didn't want to even be seen touching this idea that the elections were rigged.
Yeah, because happens, I agree with you, because once that happens, if you have a homogeneous society, like say Japan or Korea, you have a shared culture, you have a shared history, you have a shared heritage. It's easier to manage because you have just one touchstone. If you have a huge multiracial continental empire and people can't agree on anything anymore, then the only thing you have is the symbols. And once you break the symbol, then what do you have holding together? Absolutely nothing. Because people are inherently tribal.
The human capacity to lie is possibly the reason why we have civilization. Now, what I mean by that is, and those symbols feel real to us. Mm-hmm. Like when you, like the Constitution or, like meaning how do you get 330 million people across, three time zones in order to come and still consider themselves to be Americans? Like you require those symbols. And this idea of due process, fairness under the law, all of this stuff plays into it. And no, you're right. The moment that you say, well, these elections are fake. Okay, the moment that you say it, there's going to be a break in regards to people who say you're right and people who say you're wrong.
Yep.
And then you get people who say, okay, you're right for purely for political reasons because they just want power. And they want power regardless of how they get power, even if it means destroying the integrity of the system in order to get it. This is Littlefinger in Game of Thrones. Chaos is a ladder.
Yep.
Right? I can climb that ladder of political power by destroying if I need to destroy in order to create chaos, in order to create a new situation where I'm the one that's on top or I move in my station. Now, man, I always call them traitorous or treasonous because that's effectively what it is. You're destroying something in order to get ahead politically. You have agreed.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much easier to tear something down than it is to build it up.
And, it is.
Our first question is from John Park over on YouTube. With America's 250th birthday coming up, do you think we can salvage our reputation on the international stage? Ever since Vietnam, I feel we've been more disruptive and dangerous to the world.
That's not just your feeling. That's just fact. That is not a feeling. That is a flat fact. And the answer is no. How do you do that? We attacked a country in the middle of negotiations. We've been murdering fishermen. How do you do that? I don't know how you salvage that.
I don't see that you can.
And I mean, by the way, we don't really care, to be honest. Like, I'm not bringing this up just for it. It's just the way I talk and describe it. This is the God argument, where it's like, I don't need you to agree or disagree with me. I'm God. And the U.S., when it's functioning as a hegemon, it doesn't care if you agree with me. We just need you to follow what we tell you to do. It's that. It's not like, well, we're love and light. We're justice and freedom. We have a moral high ground. We don't care if you think we have the moral high ground. I just need you to bend over. That's all. Like, I don't need you to agree with me. I don't need you to even like what I'm doing. I don't need you to think I have a great reputation. This is about power. Period.
For sure.
Yeah. So, no, we're not trying to salvage our reputation. That reputation is toast, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, no, we don't care. And I have a question because, I mean, you've traveled so much more than the only place I've ever been to is Brazil. That's it. Love it.
Nice.
I'd still be there if I could. But
yeah, Brazil was nice.
I mean, to me, it seems like that the problem with the United States is that most Americans don't really care about what happens outside of their borders. That's why most Americans can't find, like, for example, Ukraine on a map. It does not matter. And I think it's because America is so big. We are like a planet unto ourselves. Forget being an island. Like, we are our own world. Whereas in Europe, where you've been just all over, you have all these smaller countries all crammed together. Mm-hmm. Forged out of centuries of warfare and just tribalism and everything else. Do you think that is why America behaves the way that it does? Because we have no consequence for the wars that we start. There's no one in this. There's no one around who's a direct neighbor who can really hurt us. Whereas in Europe, that's not the case. In South Asia, that's not the case. If you pick a fight with your neighbor and you lose that fight, there's a solid chance you're going to lose your country too. Is that why? Is that the thought process? That's why Americans just don't care?
Exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. You nailed it. Because the truth of the matter is, if I can sit at home, let's say if the president can sit at home, press a button, and somebody somewhere else in the world dies. Okay, he's kind of disconnected from what he did versus the results and consequences of those actions. So if you are completely disassociated from the consequences of your actions, do you entirely care about the actions? Right? Like, meaning if there's no consequence for anything that I do, then why do I ultimately care? Now, you could say, well, you should feel something about it. Shoulds don't really qualify. No. The person either does or he doesn't. And if indeed you believe what you're doing is, you know, you have things that you want to accomplish, there's no consequence for the actions that you're effectively taking, then what stops you from doing those things? And I think that's the question that you're effectively getting at. It's like, there's no consequence. If George Bush can attack a country, get a million people killed, and then George Bush goes home in his pajamas finger painting, why does George Bush care about what George Bush did?
Not even George Bush, what about the American people at large? Like, you know, you have 350 million people, and most of us, most Americans honestly do not care about what happens one state over. Forget about what happens on the other side of an ocean. It's because we're so insulated.
Yeah, we don't see consequences. There's no leverage. I would tell you this. If Donald Trump started this war in Iran and there were gas lines and companies were going belly up, they would care then.
Yeah, they would.
Because it would be affecting them. But up to the point where, I mean, think of the response when we were killing fishermen, when we went after Maduro. America didn't care. I mean, it was like, Trump said he wasn't going to do that, but okay. Where's my Xbox? It was that, right? And same thing with Iran. I still wonder if the United States attacked Iran and was able to, quote, win, whatever the hell win means, would the American public have been so sour on the war? Or would they have just looked at it as a win for Donald Trump, despite the fact that he got all of these people killed?
I don't think they would have cared one way or the other. To be completely honest with you. And I think that a lot of it just has to do is just normal people are more concerned. And what I mean by normal people is just if you work a 9-to-5 and you're just trying to figure out how to pay the rent and pay your bills. That's what I mean by normal. So that's how to qualify my term because of people like, Robbie, what are you talking about normal? That's what I mean by normal. If all you're worried about is, you know, getting, you know, taking care of your kids, paying your bills, going and you know, just having a roof over your head and, you know, providing for your, for yourself and for your family, you're not really be concerned about what happens 4,000 miles away. Why would you? It doesn't impact you in any meaningful way. Price is going to go up a couple percent every year. If you're lucky, maybe you'll get a pay raise. The tax man's going to come by, is going to come by every April, pay your taxes. You're going to go to jail.
Right.
It's, that's the routine. And I just think that just at large, the American people just simply do not care. We don't care about ourselves. In big cities, like you and Tevor talk about there in New York, with, you know, these people pushing people in front of subways.
Yeah.
Why would you ever even tolerate that? And the reason is because the people who live there just simply, they don't care what happens to the other people who live in their city. Why would they care what happens to somebody who lives on the other side of the world?
Yeah, I feel you. I guess I wonder if it's not caring, or if it feels like it's an inability to do anything about it. Like you're confronted with something that you just, it's there's so many pieces that are required to do anything. It just makes you feel dejected from the process, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think of an issue. Just pick any random issue. And you look at it and you say to yourself, I don't like that. And then secondary question is, okay, what do I do about the fact that I don't like that? And you stop right there. Because it's like, it's confusing, right? Like if you were an Israeli, and let's say you were a non-rapey Israeli, and you were a non-rapey and an Israeli that disagreed with the government, how do you stop your government from behaving in the way that it's behaving? And what do you do for political protests? And I guess my thought is, you're not going to do shit. Mm-hmm. Like, meaning anything, like you are so at that point alone in your political disposition and context of everybody else in the government that you may be put in a cage yourself if you're showing political opposition to the government that you ostensibly are under. Yeah, I don't know. I find that is our issue. How do you do anything in a country that seems to be disengaged? And maybe the disengaged has more to do with just unclarity in regards to what to do. I don't know. It's a question, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. You know, one of the things I've read, you know who A.P. Hill was?
A.P. Hill?
Yeah, A.P. Hill.
No.
So he was an abolitionist, and he was actually a Confederate general. Like, I mean, he was an outspoken abolitionist, and he served in the Confederate Army.
Yeah.
And he was once asked in one of the letters, why did you choose the Confederacy as opposed to the Union, given that you are a staunch, vocal opponent of slavery? He said, well, two things are true at the same time. He said, one, just because you can't be a butcher yourself doesn't mean that you don't partake of what the butcher provides. I'm talking about the system.
Right.
And second, what could have been done peacefully, the president decided to do with force of arms. So his argument is kind of like what Lee was. So you invaded my home, I'm going to fight you. And whereas in any other case, we would have been natural allies with this.
I see.
And I think that's probably where the bulk of the American people are, and probably even the Europeans to an extent, is that you look around, you see what's going on, and just because you can't stomach being a butcher yourself doesn't mean that you're not going to go buy that pound of meat because it's been provided for you by the service, by the system that's giving it to you.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's like, I can't see myself killing a cow, but Lord knows I'm going to eat the steak.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that I think there's a lot of truth to that. And horses to people, thank you for the $1. To add to your earlier point, JT, the Navy SEALs botched an operation in North Korea recently, and it resulted in the murder of at least one fisherman just going about his day, and no one gave a crap.
Yes. This was the story that was reported, what was it, last year, I think?
No.
Where when Donald Trump went to North Korea under the terms of some kind of peace agreement between the two, or at the very least where they were shaking hands and bringing down hostilities, because they were yelling at each other about Rocket Man and missiles and all this other stuff. Trump, in this big display, goes to North Korea, shakes Kim Jong-un's hand, even walks across the demilitarized zone, and people were hailing this, myself included, as a positive development, right? North Korea was never going to get rid of its nukes. So that was never going to be on the table. Even though the U.S. media was asking Trump, are they going to get rid of their nukes? Are they going to get rid of their nukes? The media in this country are idiots. Like the very positioning of that question assumes that North Korea is somehow going to disarm itself as if the United States is this honest actor. It's like, you're out of your mind. But nevertheless, while Trump was apparently there, they were trying to put some kind of listening device into North Korea because apparently they didn't have many spies or a spy network in the country itself that was, let's say, doing
treasonous.
Good. Yeah, right, right, right. Thank you. In trying to do so, the Navy SEALs basically go in dark, hangs out in the water for God knows how long. And when they finally pop up, there's a fisherman that just so happens to be there that the Navy SEALs didn't want to take the chance of being seen, in which case they murder the fisherman. The guy wasn't doing anything wrong. Like, think about that. You are out there
in his own country.
In his own country. And this is all being done under the auspices of a peace talks. That's mind-blowing. That guy had a family. That guy probably had a wife and kids. That guy was just a person, just like any of us. Yeah. Imagine yourself getting killed, or somebody that you care about getting killed, just going to the store for milk. Yeah. That's effectively what took place, right? Like, that stuff is outrageous. And the New York Times reported this. It didn't get a huge amount of press, even though you would think an international incident like that would. But it's just wild.
People just don't care. Let me see. Over on YouTube, Drop Z17P, Robbie, do you think that dirty English parasites must take responsibility for hiding behind Ukraine's back and making them believe that they can win? I'm going to assume that's a typo. It means Ukrainians.
Okay.
Listen, when it comes to British politics, I think that the British people are starting to wake up to the fact they got bigger problems than their warmongering, impotent, pathetic government. I think that the British people are finally starting to realize that their government not only does not care about what they think, but actively hates them. And I think that these recent race riots are a reflection of that. I mean, if you keep asking your government over and over and over again, hey, you know, housing is really hard to get here. It's really hard to get jobs. We keep importing all these people from all around the world. And could you maybe like stop just for a little while? Like, you know, you have to deport people here that are here. Like, you don't have to go full Robbie, but could you at least stop letting more people in so maybe my son can get a job or maybe I can get one. Maybe I can afford to pay my heating bill this winter.
Yeah.
And then the government says, shut up, racist. Well, if you keep saying that long enough to people who honestly are not racist and you keep punching down, eventually you're going to make those people into the boogeyman that you're afraid they're going to be. And I think that's what the British government is starting to kind of figure out now. I don't know what that's going to look like. I hope it doesn't turn violent. But to answer your question, I don't think that the British people are responsible for what's happening in Ukraine because they don't have a say. It's just like here. What elected official asked the American voter, hey, let's go to war with Iran. That'd be a great idea. It's the same thing with the Brits. No one asked. They just did it.
Yeah.
So that's a great democracy.
Do you believe that people are responsible for their government in any way?
If you have an elected government, yeah. But that's the problem that we don't. Like, we have the illusion that elections matter. Like, no, for example, I think you can actually make the case that what's going on with the European Union, Britain, and the United States is that we are corporations pretending to be countries that have a board of directors that actually run the things, and that the elected officials are nothing more than glorified PR people with the illusion that you have a choice. I think that's where we are now. And so to answer your question, if you were in a truly democratic system, yeah, the voter is ultimately responsible because a vote is more powerful than a rifle. Mm-hmm. The problem that we have is that the people have no power. We don't have a say. So if you have no say in what the government does, then how can you be held accountable for what the government does do in your name?
Do you believe that people have power in general? Like, meaning if people asserted themselves for whatever particular reason, I don't know. If the U.S. came out tomorrow and said, everybody with the last name of Cobb is going to be put into a grinder, made hamburgers, and everybody is going to have to eat those hamburgers. Obviously, the public is not going to accept that. I'm trying to use a ludicrous example of something that the public is going to be like, hey, my last name is Cobb. F off. You're not going to put me in a meat grinder, right? Does the public accept putting Bob Cobbs in a meat grinder? Let's say there are 30,000 of them.
Yeah.
Does the rest of the public say, okay, I don't like the fact that they're putting Bob Cobb in a meat processor, and I don't want to really eat Bob Cobb for 250th anniversary, but okay. Or does the public lose its mind?
Which one do you think? But JT, here's the problem. All these Cobbs, what they do is that they're actually here. They are a subversive fifth column. And what they are, the enemy from within. And to protect the society that we have, we must round up these everyone by the name of Cobb. And we have got to put them someplace, maybe on an island off the coast, where they can be contained, corralled. So that way you can be free to go rack up more credit card debt at Walmart. It's all in how it is that you do it. Because what you said before is right.
Bob Cobb, though. You got to eat Bob Cobb by law.
Well, the problem is the government's never going to be honest with you and tell you that you're going to be eating Bob. What they're going to do is they're going to ship Bob to Eastern Montana. They're going to ground him up, and they're going to ship him to McDonald's, and then you'll be eating Bob unbeknownst to you because you think that he's – you got to remember, the ruling class, I wish that they were as stupid as people thought they were. They're not stupid. They're devious. They're evil as hell.
What I'm getting at, Rob.
But at large, they're not dumb. I wish they were.
Something slightly different. I agree with you. That's exactly what they would do. You wouldn't know that you were eating Bob Cobb, and they put Bob Cobb in Guantanamo Bay or something like that and just, you know. But I guess what I'm getting at is, if the public is pissed, are you telling me that the public's will doesn't matter? I guess my argument is that the public does have power. It's just tranquilized.
Well, the public has power, but they don't realize that they do. Because at the end of the day, what is power? Power is an illusion. At the end of the day, power resides with wherever it is that the man on the street decides it resides, because critical mass is a thing. So if the population writ large decides that the patriarch has power, or a president has power, or a king has power, up until the point that they don't, then the people themselves will rise up and take that power back. The problem is, though, is how long does it take before people remember that they've got the power? So the problem we have here with the so-called democracies is that we keep believing that elections matter and that power resides with the electorate. But that's not true. That hasn't been true. I haven't made the case. That hasn't been true since 1865. Now, you can say that power died in 1963 with JFK when he got his head blown off. I go further back. Mm-hmm. That's just an argument about a calendar. At the end of the day, though, is this: when does the will of the people break, and when are the people pacified to the point where you must submit until they realize I actually do have a say and I can use violence to enforce my will?
Yeah,
that's the problem right now. We're not there yet, and now that the country's so big and it's so and it's so divided culturally and ethically and religiously and everything else, when the wheels come off, I don't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's what I'm afraid of.
And I agree with you on that one. I guess the thing is, that has to happen before robots get to the point of being able to do everything. Meaning, robots is a disruption of power in regards to the labor force and the people to be able to use their will to say, we're not going to do this work. We're not going to do this job. We're going to boycott, et cetera, et cetera. The moment that you have robots and AI, oh, that changes so much. It changes so much. I think we are walking into a dark room without necessarily entirely paying attention to what's in that room. And I guess this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier today with Ted. Yep. This idea of like, China has been using robots like hotcakes in the factories and everything else, and they've been using it in order to effectively buttress the labor market. I don't know if we've been doing that to that degree. And even with the AI thing, like inevitably it will get to a point where they would say, we're going to put this AI into a device. Mm-hmm. And that device is going to be able to do all sorts of things in the actual world. And oh man, when that happens, labor is going to be under serious pressure.
Yeah, well, at that point, the only recourse that the citizenry will have will be violence. The question is then at that point, because before, no, but the question always was if there is a revolt and if the state calls up an army, will it then open fire on its own, on its own people? Like right. Queen Anne Palms, there's famous, I guess like 20 years ago now, where there was a big study about U.S. Marines. Like, if you were ordered, would you open fire on the American people? About right. 40% of them said yes, 60% said no. So
Unit cohesion
falls apart. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's called civil war at that point.
Robots don't have that problem.
They do not.
They do as they are told.
They do not.
And so once that happens, I mean, as a Christian, they're looking forward to it. Okay, I see what's coming on now with the Mark of the Beast. I understand how this plays out. I don't know if people who are secular understand what is coming because it is horrifying.
Well, you heard me say this is, I think I said when I was talking earlier today, this comes across as like a religious tint to it, just in the way that it comes across very bad. It's like a Mark of the Beast stuff, like the
like the currency,
like the crypto wallets and stuff like that, with the government digital currency and that type of stuff, being able to cut somebody off if you don't like that person or you don't like what they were saying. Like they debanked Nigel Farage, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And whatever you think of Nigel Farage, the idea that he needs to be, quote, debanked is outrageous. The Canadian truckers, same thing. No. Imagine what that looks like when you're dealing with, let's say, a Joe Biden era. And Biden decides, okay, well, I don't like the fact that these people are working for the Russians. I don't like mm-hmm. the fact that these people are working with the Ukrainians. I don't like the fact that they're in opposition to me. I don't like what they're saying on YouTube. I don't like what they're saying on Twitter. Like, it's chilling. It's just chilling. And there doesn't seem to be a hedge on it. And it doesn't even seem to be acknowledged as going in that direction as we, you know, head speed, 1,000 miles per hour in that direction. No, it looks dark, Robbie. I agree. No, but I got to go with the idea that I think it looks darker before it gets lighter. Like, meaning I am cynical in the immediate. I am bullish in the latter time.
I am too, but I think we're both bullish for different reasons. Because as I see stuff that's coming on, is like as these things happen, I believe that rather just means we're just that much closer to the end when Jesus comes back and starts busting heads. So that's the hope that the Christian has. What does that look like for someone who doesn't believe? I don't know. I mean, maybe that this too will one day pass. Maybe not for me. Maybe not for my kids, my grandkids. Maybe for my great grandkids. But every system eventually always falls apart. And so maybe that's the hope. I don't know. PhD Nika Riviera, Robbie and JT, do you still believe in electoral politics? I do not.
I don't believe in them under our current model. Like, look, from my point of view, politics could work in a society that was ideologically geared towards politics working. But this idea of good faith built into the political process, I don't think that works. And I don't necessarily want to assume the worst in regards to candidates and stuff, but I assume the worst in regards to the way people act, especially when you've had a political system and the only thing that stops you in that political system is okay, I'm saying this weirdly. Look, we have a capitalistic system. We call it a democracy. Yep. But the reality of it is these things intersect. And they intersect in a way where one seems to be eating the other, which means that if you can get rich, then you get rich, even if it's at the expense of your political office. If you're looking at the president, for example, he's getting rich. His kids are getting rich. Joe Biden was getting rich. Nancy Pelosi, filthy rich. And all of these people are effectively leveraging their office in order to gain funds. Now, the patina of democracy, sure, but when it comes down to it, how do I profit? And that seems to be the thread that runs through everything in regards to our society, whether it's political or whether it's not. I don't know how you have a viable political system when personal profit is always the highest aspiration. I just don't know how that works. And so regardless of who you put into office, there's still being slots in a machine, even if they think, I am going to do my best for my constituents, that will be whittled away one move after the next. Like, for example, let's say I get into politics and my thing is I want to do right by my constituents. All right. First, I got to get money, right? Like, I need to get enough money to win. And then it becomes, okay, what do you do for the money? I may tell myself, all right, I'm still going to do good things, but I do need to peel off a piece of myself in order to do these other good things. Like, step by step, get whittled away.
I just think start compromising.
Yeah, you compromise all the way through. I just think it's, I mean, and then when you get somebody who finally doesn't compromise, those people get weeded out. Yeah. So I don't know, man. That's a tough one. I mean, and then you can never really touch the real. Like, they always, when they make this argument about freedom, it's like, oh, we believe in freedom. We believe in democracy and everything else. It's freedom for people with money. That's not a freedom as an absolute. It's a difference in those things. When we're talking about automated cars being dropped on the roads, you don't have the freedom to bitch about that. You just accept it. The brain chips. You don't have the freedom. You have the freedom for Pepsi and Coke. You have the freedom to type of jeans or the type of suit you wear. You have freedoms in that sense. But it's people with means is making policies. People with means that are have the latitude of freedom. It's different. It's not the same. It's very difficult for, freedom. That's a big, expensive word.
No, it is. Yeah. Blake has a question for me. He's like, Robbie, you are a pro-life Christian. So how could you support the death penalty for people who sell drugs? So that's a good question. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm looking at this from a historical context. Back in the 1840s and 1850s, the British waged a war against the Chinese called the Opium Wars.
Right.
The entire point of that war, Lee in the chat, you know more about this than I am, but they're just Chinese. The entire point of that war was to force open China's markets. At that time, it was called the Celestial Empire.
Yes.
And it was two reasons. One, they wanted the profits from the drug trade. Second, mass importation of drugs destroys the human capital and the cohesion of a nation.
Yes.
You make them sick. You drive them into hopelessness. You destroy the very foundation of that nation, which is its people. That is what mass drug importation does. That is the argument that I'm making here in terms of the United States. And by the way, the United States did this against the Soviet Union. Like, one of the reasons why we wanted Afghanistan was to flood the Soviet Union with opium. And that's one of the reasons why the Russians have a zero tolerance policy on drugs, as Griner found out when she went to Russia with pot. I mean, it's just, it's because it is a social pathogen of the highest order. What these people do is that they are selling poison. And what that poison does is that it poisons and destroys the very foundation of the nation, which is its people. The children suffer for it. The people who get hooked on it suffer for it. And a very small handful of people profit. You are selling poison and you are selling death on an industrial scale when you're involved in the drug trade. And by the way, I would also lump human trafficking on this. That is why I support the 9mm solution to this problem. If you're a drug addict, you deserve to every bit of help that you need to get off of that crap. If you're addicted to alcohol, you deserve everything. You deserve the right to get that poison out of your life and and be able to rebuild the life that was stolen from you. But if you're selling this stuff, if you're selling this poison, I have got zero sympathy for you. And again, this is not a Republican small R argument. I realize what I'm saying is a very authoritarian system, authoritarian argument, because in a democracy, do you have the right to destroy yourself?
To be fair, though, what he asked you was, how do you reconcile your Christian faith that do not kill with the, quote, 9mm solution and basically killing?
So, and so that is, I'm glad you asked that, because that's the follow-up. Because me as an individual, that's why I'm opposed to vigilantism. Like, I can't just go out and kill somebody because they did something that's wrong. On the flip side, the reason why I support capital punishment, whether it comes to rape or whether it comes to murder or something like that, is because it comes down to a matter of restitution. If I force myself into a woman, I'm invading the one thing that belongs to her, which is her body. How can I ever pay that back? I can't. If I take someone's life, how can I then repay that person for what I took for them? I can't. So that's the difference between justice and vengeance. Justice means if you do this, if you break the social contract, there is a price to be paid. Because if you're going to have a liberal society, so again, small r, like a free society, then there have to be rules and there have to be consequences for breaking those rules. That's why I oppose the prison system. It's a complete joke. It's a transfer of wealth. That's what it is. But the flip side of that is, though, is that you've got to have an ordered society or no one has freedom at all, because it's just the law of the jungle at that point. So,
I know, right, but that's not really what he's at. They're asking what they're trying to reconcile, meaning right. If you're the punisher, you can make that argument. That's fine.
State is the punisher. That's the point.
Because his ideology is bad guys should be murdered and killed, et cetera, et cetera. And
not
if
murdered.
The state doesn't do it, then I'm going to do it. But what they're asking you is a different question. They're asking you, how do you theologically justify what is ultimately murder? The state can come up with any kind of rationale in order for a balancer. You can never balance. There is no such thing as balance. What I may consider to be balance in a case of something against me may be different than what you consider to be balance, which means justice is always a murky subject.
Right.
And it could, an argument could be made that murdering that person or killing that person doesn't necessarily make up the gap or the balance, as opposed to having that person somehow become a better person over the course of their life, which they may at some point. Meaning, you may lose something in your society by making the determination to just kill everybody who does so, because it avoids having that person to give something back to society over the course of their life.
Sure.
But that's a different conversation, right? The state can come up with those guidelines of sorts. What they're asking you is more so a religious question.
Yeah.
Do not kill is part of the commandments. How does—
For me individually.
Oh, so from your point of view, I can back the government doing it, but it's just me that is—
Because government is set up by God. So in the Christian view, God is the highest authority. God created government. And to back this up, Deuteronomy and Leviticus both explain how government is to be set up, what its function was, and how it's supposed to function.
So the government is the highest authority in general.
The government is a higher authority than the individual. So God is the highest, then government, and then the person. So basically, in the Christian view, it's an anarchical system. Everyone gives up a little bit of their individual liberty for the social contract to have law and order. So, like, I cannot just go and do whatever I want. We're going to agree that there are certain things that you cannot do, and if I do, there'll be a price that has to be paid. For example, if under biblical law, say if I robbed from you, I had to pay you back. I would have to pay you back what I took plus restitution to make up for whatever it is I took away from you.
Wait, why can't I just have the government kill you if you do that?
Because it all comes down to severity, right? So if I steal your car, that's an inconvenience to you.
But that's a valid act. You've stolen my car from me. I needed that car. I may need a job. And
that's
from my point of view,
maybe
it's better that you not exist so you don't do that. And as a lesson for other people who may steal cars.
But
why can't I come to that assessment? An argument,
because it comes down to a couple of different things, right? Again, the severity of the offense, plus I'm able to pay you back. I'm able to do restitution for what it is that I took. Like a lot of times people say,
you've taken my sense of security.
Well, sure. Then I have to pay you back. Now on the flip side of that, sure I can.
You can't pay back my sense of security.
No, I can't pay you back your sense of security, but I can pay you back your property and then pay you back for the time that I caused you to say lose out of a job or something. That's something I can physically give you. And one of the things that the Bible said, that one of the reasons people will say that the Bible condones slavery, in a sense, that is true, because if I was unable to repay you, I would then have to work for you till I worked off that debt. So it was more like indentured servitude. It wasn't chattel slavery like what we had here in the United States. So one way or the other, I pay you back. Now, if I murder somebody, I cannot pay you back because I've murdered you. And so that's why in the system of the judges, in biblical law, murderers were put to death, because I cannot pay you back for your life because I took it. Rape is the same way. The one thing that any of us ever owns is our body. This is all I've ever owned.
I'm not trying to denigrate rape. I don't want to put that.
I get that.
I would make the point that the person still exists.
But the person exists, but I've violated them in the most violent and intimate way possible. And there's no way that I can pay that back. And that's why the Bible, not Robbie, that's why the Bible penalty for rape in the Bible is death, typically death by stoning. So it's a public, thing. So you have the deterrence factor. So if you do this, you're going to be publicly executed. So that way other people who have the same idea probably would think twice before they did it. Whereas if you have a system like we have right now, where if you go and you rape somebody, you could be out maybe in 6 months and do it again. What price have you actually paid?
This line gets very fuzzy real quick. And I'm telling you what's going to happen is that line is going to move very quickly. Meaning, in the same way that you say it's okay to kill rapists, I can very well justify the killing of you for stealing my car, or this person for doing drugs, or this other person for selling drugs,
et cetera. But that all comes back to the question about, do electoral politics still work? Because if they did, then the population writ large would get together and then vote on what you're talking about. Does the penalty equal the crime? Like, for example, in Islamic societies, if I steal something, you lose your hand.
Right.
So, I mean, that's Sharia 101. Everybody knows about that. That's not the penalty in Christianity. The penalty in Christianity is that you pay restitution for what you took. So if you live in a liberal democracy, again, small r, then the people writ large can be asked, what do you want corporately as a people for the punishment to be for this crime? See what I mean? So the body politic agrees, if you commit grand theft auto, then you get hung from a streetlight, then that's what it's going to be, because the people chose it.
Well,
God, frankly, is more forgiving than people are.
As you often point out, we don't live in a democracy.
No, for sure.
We live in a representative government, supposedly. I just think that that's extreme. That's all. I think, like, I would much rather prefer, and look, I can be a hard ass on this stuff too, so I agree with you. On the sense of, look, we have a prison system that seems to do more punishing as opposed to rehabilitation.
That's because we have a justice system.
It's supposed to be a justice system, but it's not really justice. I think anybody who's gone through it will tell you it's not really justice. It's what you can prove versus what you can't prove. And it's people being slogged through a system
And there's a lot of people in the chat saying, Robbie, those are Old Testament things. That's true. I'm talking about, because that's where Christian law originates from. Now, if you want a New Testament, if you want this from the New Testament, Romans 13 famously says, it talks about how government is ordained by God, and that government, that the sword of the state, I'm paraphrasing, I have it in front of me, but the sword of the state will not be returned in vain, and that government should be a terror to evil workers.
But what happens when the evil workers are in the government itself? It's still ordained by God.
Yeah. Government's always ordained by God. And bad government is a judgment.
Even when it's somebody like Trump who's monetizing the presidency, killing people and so forth, it's still ordained by God.
Because of that point, it becomes a judgment. Government, it's like technology, right? If someone asks you, is technology good or bad? The answer is always yes. The answer with government's always yes, too. People get the government that you deserve. If you have an unruly civilization or population that eats itself, to have order, you've got to have a strong government. And by strong, I mean a ruthless government that will go in and bust heads. Whereas if you have a more cohesive population that agrees on more
basic principles,
we shouldn't be pushing people in front of subway trains. You don't need to have a police force as big as one that doesn't. That's why I guess the argument. I don't know how to phrase it.
Well, no, I guess what I'm getting at is if it's ordained by God, then by definition, what it does is just, right?
Doesn't have to be just, because you got to remember is that so in the hierarchy of, so God's law is the highest law,
right?
And thou shalt not murder is one of those. That applies for the state, and it applies for people as well. And so it all comes down to jurisdictions. Government being involved, Robin, government murdering people is a wrong thing. But there's a difference between murder and justice. That's like, for example, I have a sister that got murdered. If the state of Florida executed the woman that murdered my sister after he was convicted in a court of law, that's not murder. That is justice, because it's a life for a life. It is an eye for an eye.
Right.
That is a function of the state. The state is designed to be a terror for people who work evil works, not people who work good.
Yeah, we live
in an inversion of that now. We have a government that terrorizes its people, and that government will one day be judged. It will be destroyed by God, whether that happens to a popular revolution or through an implosion, whatever else. Ask the Romans how that work out for you. People don't speak Latin anymore. There's a reason for that. It's because God destroyed them.
I don't think it was God that destroyed them. I think it was policy that the Romans were effectively running that had real world political consequences that destroyed the government. And I suspect that the same thing will be true here, that there will be real world actions that are taking place that have, let's say, fallback consequences or backfires. On the way that we operate. There's no evidence of God being involved in that process, short of human will breaking down, if that makes sense. I mean, look, you could be right on some kind of non-corporeal level, overlooking things in the fourth dimension.
Maneuvering
pieces.
I guess that the Chinese have a good term for it. They call it the mandate of heaven. And that this is just one of those principles of natural law that just kind of see the world over. So it's, no, you can package it however it is that you want. Government, as long as it rules justly and fairly, stays in power until the point that it gets corrupted and then gets replaced.
That I agree with.
And so,
that I agree.
So if that's a principle of natural law, who then is the God of nature? It's God.
By the way, the murder of drug dealers, by the way.
That was have to.
Like, I heard your argument for it. I heard your argument for it, and you're right. It is cancerous to societies.
Yeah,
but. Let me ask you this. Do you think people would sell drugs? And for one, the CIA was selling drugs and running drugs. So there's that, which means, again, we're back to the whole mandate of heaven stuff.
Listen, our government sucks. No argument from me there.
Yeah. The other part is, do you think people would do, let's ask it this way. Do you think people would do porn if they were financially intact?
No. I think very few people would. And it's just like, one of the reasons why we have so many abortions is because it's so expensive now to have a family. And so the answer is a whole collective punishment argument. It's just, I can't afford to do this, so I'm going to murder my offspring. That is an indictment. That is an indictment of our society as a whole.
Agreed. What about drugs? How many people do you think would be on the corner selling drugs if they had the option or if they were financially intact?
Nowhere near as many as there are now.
Oh, you think it would be the same? Oh, you said.
No, I think it'd be a lot. I think it'd be a lot less because
it'd be a lot less. I guess that's what I'm getting at. So, how can we justify murdering or killing drug dealers when the reality is, even you agree that some of this stuff is an aspect of state, not behaving in the way that state is supposed to behave. If we had a viable society, those mm-hmm. people wouldn't be selling drugs, or those people wouldn't be necessarily doing porn, at the very least not at the degree that they're doing it now. Yeah, so I why? Agree. Yeah. Okay.
Because what they're doing is that they're compounding a bad situation and making it that much worse. That's the problem. So instead of using that ingenuity, instead of getting out and getting involved with the Jamarl Thomas School of social engineering, going out and protesting and stuff, you said, no, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the easy way out, and I'm going to start selling poison to my neighbors so I can make them even more miserable and I can profit off of their misery.
Who said that's the easy way out?
Well, I mean, that's why people are going to be selling drugs, right? It's a way for them to make a quick buck. You have to pay taxes sure. on it. So, but that's the point, is that what you're doing is that you're taking advantage of an already rotten situation. What you're doing,
that doesn't warrant murder to me. I consider it murder. You may call it justice. I call that murder.
Well, that's murder. Let's define our terms. What is murder? Murder is when one person takes the life of another person.
Not necessarily.
But I'm just the cliff notes. Just kind of make this as simple as I can. Because you got to remember, I'm a very simple guy.
No, I get that. But I'm just saying, within the context of that simplicity, mm-hmm. I am defining murder as wanton killing. And I'm saying that the state that we want to kill people because of drugs. At that point, the state can make a determination to kill people for pretty much anything.
I agree with you there. And governments commit murder all the time. I mean, the argument that I would make is that the Japanese committed mass wholesale murder in China yes. for like 8 years. Oh, yeah. That was murder on an industrial scale. That was done by one nation against another.
Yeah.
So I'm not making the argument that governments don't commit murder. I'm talking about if you have a lawful government that has a functioning justice system that is agreed upon by the body politic, then someone who's convicted of a crime, that's the word convicted of a crime, and then the punishment that is carried out, again, with the as a lawful act of that government, that's not murder, that's justice.
If I go make anything lawful, Robbie.
Well, that's
just false. They're just documents. They're just things that people write down. Anything could be lawful by a government. Donald Trump murdering fishermen was lawful. Nobody went after Trump for it. Donald Trump monetizing the presidency, lawful. It doesn't supposed to be, but he's doing it anyway. Nancy Pelosi making all of that money in regards to Congress, lawful.
I agree. I agree with you.
They can make anything lawful. That doesn't mean anything.
But that's the breakdown, though, between the religious view and the secular view, is that from the religious view, there is a higher law and a higher authority than the state. That's God. And if God said murder is wrong, then it's wrong by definition. It doesn't matter if it's some thug shooting a clerk at a 7-Eleven or a government committing a genocide like what Israel did in Gaza. No. Murder is murder is murder.
Yeah.
It comes down to matter of jurisdiction. If you're taking the humanist view that the state is the highest authority, then you're right. You can do whatever it is that you want because you make the rules. He who has the guns makes the rules.
Right.
From a religious standpoint, the argument that I'm making is that there is a law that's higher than the state, and that law says you shall not do this. If a state violates that, it will do it to the point where God destroys that state.
You know what's funny? No bullshit. We are coming at this in very similar ways, but speaking about it in very different ways. I'm not taking the perspective that state is everything. I'm taking the perspective that state can be full of shit.
Oh, they are.
That state can 100%. Write whatever the fuck they want to write down. That there's like, there now, is a right and wrong.
Hey, we're looking at this from a prospect of jurisdictions. Like I'm looking at there's a jurisdiction that's higher than the state. But if you don't believe that there's anything higher than the state, then my argument doesn't make any sense because in the system that we live in now, there is no higher authority than the nation state.
Right.
So I mean, so that's where the breakdown comes from. And that's one of the things that I really get, and I punch right all the time, especially in Southern Christians about this. You know, saying, no, basically your point is like, no, Trump's not committing murder. It's like, of course he is. Read your Bibles.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, from a biblical standpoint, it's actually a curse. What Trump is a symbol of a curse that God puts on the nation. It says, I will give children and women rule over you, and the stranger will devour your house like locusts. Well, that's not a blessing. I mean, look at the governments that we've had the last 60 years. Have we been blessed? Yeah. Has America gotten better? We've declined in every measurable aspect that we have. And so I look at that as a judgment from on high. Whereas if you don't believe there's a higher power, you say, well, this is just a natural cycle of nations, and it's eventually going to implode. The answer to which of those two views is correct, again, it's like technology, they both are. Because eventually this will end one way or the other. It's just a matter of how.
Yeah. Robbie, believe it or not, I actually agree with you on that, that there is a higher thing than just state. So, no, I agree.
Yeah.
Rationality. Yeah. Just because the state says something, I don't think it's obviously it's not right or wrong. States function to their own self-interest. And so, no, I agree with you. I may not add God into it, but I definitely, morality matters. It's higher than state.
Yeah. So, it all kind of comes down to it.
We have come to the end. Do we have any more questions before we close?
There's one. So Frankie wants, Philip Blair, Robbie, are you aware of any equestrian therapy practices there in the greater Kalispell area? None that I know of. I know there are a couple of ranches that were offering it, but one of them is actually closed down because they just can't afford anymore. So they're selling the ranch to a bunch of developers. Hurrah.
I'm just like, hurrah.
It's so bad, man. It's so bad.
Well, Robbie, I have enjoyed this.
No, me too.
We have kept you guys for the Q&A. Ted is going to be back first thing in the morning for our regularly programmed episode at 9 a.m. And Robbie, when is your next gaming channel going to be on, just so the audience will know?
I don't think I'm going to stream again until the 1st. And I will probably do a Baldur's Gate 3 stream. I'm not sure. This kind of just go from there. I'm afraid what the schedule is going to look like with the new requirements on Rumble. So just got a bunch of stuff to do. I've got the AI really chugging along. You need to jump on and let me know how you like working with Fang. I need your feedback.
I will. I promise. Right. I need to cut the videos today, and so I'll use it today.
Yeah, let me know what you think. And I'm actually upgrading your cutter engine as we speak, so I'll let you know whenever it's done, then let me know what you like and then what you don't.
Badass. And by the way, for the cutter engine, I just put it in the incoming folder, and it would spit it out in the outcoming folder. Or is there something else I need to do?
You'll go into the UI, and then you'll tell if you want to post. I'll walk you through it. Basically, is that each client is governed by its own brain. So that way there's no drift. That way it doesn't look for gaming content for a political podcast or something. Mm-hmm. And so I'll walk you all through it. Super easy. But yeah, you just drop it into the incoming. I'll spit out an outcoming. And then you pick if you want clips or shorts, if you want captions or not. And it's come on really good. It's Fang has actually just got finished reading all of Ted's books. And so now she thinks she's a communist.
Really? Oh, you did say that. You did say that. It's wild. It's like a little Ted Raw.
Oh, yeah. It's wild. It's wild. But now I'll walk you through it. Super easy.
All right. Well,
all right, y'all.
You have a good one.
Have a good one, y'all.
Thanks, man. Be safe.